Good morning, welcome back to the Microsoft Virtual Academy. It's lovely to have you back with us. Today we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic. If you're anything like I am, you must have dreamt about having the successful business, retiring somewhere in the Bahamas, and just earn and live off the dividends and the funds that come your way. But the reality is, the cold shower that we have to face is that if our businesses are not administratively set up for accelerated growth, that dream will not really come to fruition. I'm Catherine Young, I'm the owner of Thinkroom Consulting. By now you know me well, so much more importantly is the guest in studio. Welcome, Kiet.
Thank you, Catherine.
Lovely to have you here. And Kiet's going to tell us all about how to get set up administratively for our businesses for accelerated growth. But before we get there, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I'm a co-founder of a South African venture investor firm called Knife Capital.
Right.
But we also we see ourselves as entrepreneurship activists. So we're very involved in M&A advisory services to scale-up companies and also look at business acceleration, various initiatives, and also very involved in the African entrepreneurship ecosystem.
Yeah, it's fantastic, Kiet, and I'm looking forward to the stories that you're going to share because I know that they are there a lot, and some of them beautiful and some of them horrible.
Well, especially when it comes to accelerated growth.
Yeah.
We always refer to it as the fasten your safety belt strategy. You know?
Exactly.
It is actually quite dangerous and sometimes very difficult to go from there through the valley of death and the up curve.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the discussion. What do you do to keep yourself sane?
To keep myself sane? Many things. I'm a bit of an extreme sports guy, but in my later life, I just clear my head with a ride on my Harley from Cape Town to Franschhoek or around
That's
the peninsula.
Awesome.
Yeah, luckily, we have a beautiful country to do that kind
that
of stuff.
That is awesome. I'm envious. Honestly, I'm envious. Kiet, we're going to be talking about accelerated growth. And truthfully, you're one of the people I respect the most in this field in terms of the knowledge you have. But let's start at the beginning, right? Businesses have to be set up properly to get ready for accelerated growth. So let's first cover this topic of data vaults. What is a data vault?
Well, a data vault is a secure space where a company keeps its financial, legal, and business documents, which are which reflect the blueprint of the company.
Yeah.
So all the historic documents, but also future strategies in one space.
Yeah. So it's a physical space somewhere on the cloud, I would imagine.
Well, it used to be always a physical space.
Right.
So that's where some called a data room. So think of a physical room, and there's your, you know, contracts and your HR file and your strategy file and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But with the explosion of the cloud, it's these days mostly virtual, but there's also some element of physical documents that people don't want to necessarily, or it's not practical to put it in the cloud.
So what would your advice be? I mean, how do you get a data room or a data vault set up?
Well, there's these days various professional data vault companies.
Yeah.
Microsoft SharePoint is something we use in conjunction. We work with Microsoft companies.
Yeah.
So there's, as long as it's secure and that, but we'll talk maybe a little bit about that later.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's important that we understand this concept of data rooms or data vaults because we're going to get into a lot of the detail of that.
But the reason why it's important is not about just keeping all your admin in one space. I mean, when you do have accelerated growth as a company, we always sort of look at it that businesses won't fail because they do one thing wrong. You know, it's not going to be because, and generally it's not going to be because of their technical ability or the fact that, I mean, these are amazing companies. They're starting to become scale-ups out of startups. And it's not going to be because of that. So it's usually going to be because they don't scale proportionally, you know, the team or the funding or the business model.
Yes.
And a way to make sure you have your hand on all the buttons that could potentially go wrong, marketing, sales. So it is always good to have that documented and strategized.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that it sounds like admin, but this is not about red tape. This is about being serious about growing your business and working on your business as opposed to working in your business.
Yeah. So, Kiet, would it then be a case of you start doing that as soon as you get your business started? Or when do you start gathering a data vault?
Practically, in the perfect world, absolutely. When you register your company and, you know, you put your company registration documents and your shareholders agreements and your share register.
I sense from your response that doesn't happen.
No, I've done enough due diligences in my life to know that we have to retrofit this. Usually send the list of data room action list and all that. So you may have to manage it closely. But in an ideal world, you have all of that. Because you have it anyway, somewhere in your computer or in your emails or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we are also, you have to look at the reality of running your own business,
yeah.
and those realities, and admin doesn't always, I mean, you have to be out there selling your good or service.
Yeah.
So as long as you're selling, that is the most important thing. And usually later on, as one gets more resources, you sort of really catch up on admin. Yeah.
Fantastic. And we're going to be talking about the potential investors a little bit later, but I would imagine for them it's important to have these documents all in a data vault, right?
Yeah, I think there's such a big information gap between what investors need to see and do to assure themselves of the opportunity. Also, usually to convince their investment committees and stakeholders that they're making the right decision.
Right.
This is usually a risk game.
Yeah.
You need to quantify and understand that risk because you're not gonna kind of get out of the risk, and that's not the point. But the point is, when things start going not according to business plan, which it always does, no one expects it does, then one has to sort of have enough knowledge as an investor to add value and get everything back on track. And the only way you can do that is with knowledge of the company.
It is absolutely fascinating advice you're giving. SMEs, really, have you started your business? Where are you? Are you in growth phase, acceleration? Do you have a data room or a data vault? Is it updated? Talk to me about the philosophy behind data vaults.
So the philosophy is this: if you are just saying that you're a company that's going to disrupt this and this industry, or you want to one day exit to the likes of Microsoft or so, then if it's just speak and you're not actually backing that up with action, well, then you're an average company and that's okay. So we're kind of talking here about the companies that truly believe that they're going to win. You know, it's actually. Talking, one of my friends is a sportsman, and they actually gone on and won a World Cup.
Yeah.
And he was saying one of the things that they practice, because everyone teaches you how to do your sport and how
pass
to kind of catch the ball and all those kind of things, but no one actually show you how to practice how to hold the World Cup in the air.
That
so
is
one of the
beautiful.
Things they did in their practice sessions is to practice. Because it's going to happen. It's just a matter of beating all the other companies, and yes, you have to be technically good.
Yeah.
And this is sort of for that moment to say, well, let's practice and let's do it in terms of a way that one day we're not surprised when one amazing company wants to do business with us. It's not. I just want to clarify. It's not all about exiting your business. It's good high growth lifestyle businesses. It's about dividend streams. About your realization strategy. But specifically, African businesses generally grow through partnerships,
right.
So you're not going to just organically grow in a vacuum.
Yes.
There's a
yes.
whole ecosystem around you,
yes.
and generally those partners are professional B2B companies,
yes.
and those companies are not just going to sign a JV agreement or partnership agreement with you cross-border or whatever that is without doing some sort of diligence on you.
Right.
And the philosophy behind Data Room is the wrong thing to say when someone says, amazing, I fell for your pitch, I really like what you guys are doing, can I have some more information? You should not say, what information do you need? You should say, absolutely, after some legals and all the rest of it, but yes, I've got a virtual data room available, and I can access you, give you different access levels, and that just differentiates you from all the other companies that don't have it. Secondly, it tells that big business that doing business with the small business is going to be less trouble than it's not going to be. It's going to be easy.
Yes. Yeah,
but we'll talk about that.
That is fascinating. So you're saying that the companies may well do a due diligence and ask for this information. And I would imagine that brings them peace of mind if you can respond and say, sure, he has access to my data vault.
It's all about patterns of recognition. So
so
businesses
and
investors and so look for patterns and what they've seen before. And there's it's not statistically proven, but I can tell from our side we can tell you very much.
Yeah.
I learned more about the first hour of going into a due diligence with a company than the rest of the 2 month process, because just the way they have administratively run their business tells you whether they can actually scale and whether they can do what they say.
Got it.
I mean, you need some luck and all of that, but
That is beautiful advice. Okay, so we understand the philosophy behind a data vault. It's not only about exiting. It's not only about investors. It's actually about those who want to have high growth, high scale. If you have this in place, you just differentiate yourselves already, right?
It enables you to jump on opportunities much quicker because as you can do your leadership strategies, brand positioning, chip away at pitches, kind of looking at lead generation. But this is all about now when you catch that lead and you actually have that 1 hour meeting with someone, or you if someone is on the hook, to basically just prove to them that you can jump on this opportunity and you can execute better than anyone else.
That is absolutely brilliant. Have you got any examples, and we don't have to mention the name of the companies necessarily, but any examples of an SME where this has worked, where they were ready?
Yes, I'm through one of our business accelerators, Grindstone.
Yeah.
We had a company that was, they put themselves in a position to be noticed by a NASDAQ listed company.
Yeah.
And that this particular company had a need to they liked what this SME was doing, and they had a specific need for their product, but there was a tight timeline on it because they wanted to launch this product, if all goes well, at a specific electronic show in the US.
Right.
So for them, the timeline, and when they asked this company, here's the term sheet, when can we start a due diligence? The CEO of the SME could say, when can you get on a plane?
Wow, that is powerful.
And also, I can immediately give you access to my full data vault. So it was a matter of an hour, and the guys were in the data.
That is powerful. If that's not encouraging to you as an SME.
And that deal would not have happened if they couldn't have done that.
So the deal happened?
Yes, very, very nice. Very nice exit for the guys, and such nice guys as well.
That is absolutely fantastic. So talking about exits, right, I want to talk about this concept of deal fatigue, right? So can you explain to us who don't understand this language well, what does exit mean? What does deal fatigue mean?
Yeah, deal fatigue is sort of a prolonged. It's linked to time, but it's also linked between the information gap between investors and entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Again, anyone in the space mustn't pretend that everything's going to be perfect. There's going to be issues in these companies. There's going to be a little bit of blood on the dance floor of invoices not paid and contracts not signed. So it's not about having everything perfect, but it's about having everything available so that investors can quantify risk. But deal fatigue happens when I've been in enough facilitated situations where entrepreneurs are saying, but these investors are taking so long with their due diligence process and they don't have appetite for risk and all those. They do, but they just want to understand what that risk is, because the one thing they do have is, other than hopefully some business skills to help the company, money to help the company.
Yes.
So if there is something that they flag as a red flag, maybe the intellectual property strategies are not well enough protected or whatever, then where a company says, look, please, I need $1 million of funding, company can, after due diligence, say, actually, to be quite honest, to fix this and this and this, because we've picked it up, you need $1.2 million of funding. And we, luckily, that we can provide that or something. So it's about a mutual partnership. Remember, these investors or any partner that goes and partners with you on a business basis is doing it for the long term. So,
of course.
Yeah, so deal fatigue is that process where everyone gets frustrated for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Everyone initially said there is intent between, we're going to do this deal, there is now term sheet signed or letters of intent, and it's that process where 2 months later, 3 months later, the deal hasn't happened and everyone is frustrated, and eventually the deal falls off the table for absolutely the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and is the fatigue on both sides?
Yes, absolutely. So, I think most entrepreneurs get most frustrated by it.
Yeah.
But, as much as I love our SMEs and passionate about it, quite often it's because of their own fault, because they don't do stuff like this. Investors have usually their processes to go through, and a lot of other stuff going on. So just make it easy for them to do business with you, basically, and then you'll avoid deal fatigue.
Fascinating. Help us understand this letter of intent. You were mentioning it.
A lot of the times, one must also understand that investors, not because they're malicious or anything like that, they don't always meet with the companies in the beginning for the reason of let's sign a check and invest. They might want to assess the entrepreneur, might be a space they're very interested in, like new technologies like Bitcoin or whatever, and there's a new startup, just to understand what they're doing. And usually, that relationship is a start of a relationship, and over time that might then generate into a deal. The old advice, and it's very true, if you want funding, ask for advice, and if you want advice, ask for funding. And that's sort of something like that. But the letter of intent is, if an investor is intending to invest in you, you must push them to say, we've had now our third meeting, and there's a couple of emails, and we all feel that there's a culture fit, and it's very important, that one, and all the rest. So there's an intention to do a deal here.
Mm.
Let's put it on paper. It's usually non-binding, but basically just saying, Catherine, I want to invest in your company.
Yes.
I intend to put $1 million in, and for that, I want one seat on the board, and I want a 30% stake in the company.
Yes.
All those kind of things. So it's subject to a favorable due diligence. But before you get to a letter of intent, it's a bit of a catch-22, because I can't value your company or understand
if
I don't have the information.
Yes.
So certain information need to be made available. And that this is a way to, it's very unfair for entrepreneurs to say, well, can you send me a document or a term sheet or stuff if you haven't provided them with it or enabled them to do so.
Yeah.
So, but a bit of advice to the SMEs or anyone that's looking for funding, unless you have that letter or formal LOI, then the investor is actually not serious yet.
Not serious. Ah, so, that's lovely.
So the pitch thing needs to move from the entrepreneur pitching the investor to the investor pitching the entrepreneur
to get the balance back.
I mean, just a quick story. I was speaking to an entrepreneur yesterday that got money from US investors, and he said they arrived for their first meeting with these investors, and they arrived in their typical sort of jeans and tackies and entrepreneur, you know, tech entrepreneur type attire, and the investors were in suits and ties and stuff. And then, but in the second meeting, they thought, you know, these guys are they're actually serious. We need to up our game. So the entrepreneurs arrived a little bit dressed up in suits and ties, and the investors arrived in tackies and tried to say, we're one of you. And they said when they saw that, they knew they had them. You know?
That is a lovely story,
the
right?
The deal happened, yeah.
That is a lovely story. So what are you saying? Basically, the one question I really have also here is, so what now happens? I mean, because we hear this often, the SMEs say, but I don't want to share my IP, and they take it. Give me your opinion on that.
Yeah, I've got fairly strong opinions on that
in
terms of... you know, one mustn't give the secret sauce away necessarily, but there's quite a lot of information that you could share with a credible investor. And my opinion on that is, I mean, if you're scared of sharing that information with a potential investor, well, then you haven't done your due diligence on the investor. You know? Go to their website, look at the companies they've invested in, phone them and say, listen, how did Knife Capital treat you guys over the last 4 years?
I love that.
I mean, so quite often people are saying, well, you know, sign this NDA and all that. But typically VC investors, they don't, you know. And that's also a way to get them to NDA, because it's only fair when that letter of intent and people said subject to a favorable due diligence, we know really going into the data.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Then that's okay.
But up to that point. But yeah, intellectual property protection, I mean, you need to do what you can. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people say about they don't have any IP or don't have money for patents. It's not about patents and all the rest of it. Intellectual property is everything. Your brand, your website, your URL, your know-how within the company. And you need to kind of document it and somehow, well, for your own good to up your value of your company, you need to quantify it and you need to protect it. But it is a trade-off between... I'm more worried about whether you're allowed to do business internationally with your IP. So it's more about freedom to operate rather than it's protecting your IP. Because if it needs to be that protected, it either needs to be the next sort of medical cure.
Exactly.
Or otherwise protect your IP by dealing with clients and looking after them nicely.
I love it. You're almost giving me the sense that it's more about the spirit of the thing actually than the letter of the thing, right?
Exactly.
The only other thing, and then we'll continue, the only other thing that you were picking on that I wanted to ask, so you were talking about a cultural fit earlier on between the investor and the small business, right? Give us a horror story of where there was a bad culture fit.
Yeah, no, we've made that mistake and we'll never make it again. We've advised one or two companies that have had a major financial terms on the table that we don't feel the love between the investor and the... So I mean, I don't want to go into specifics, to unscramble that egg once an investment is made because of a culture fit. But the one point I want to just make is it's more important than anything else, because it's the one thing money can't fix.
Mm.
So if your IP strategy, your marketing positioning, or your financials is a mess, money can usually fix that.
Yes.
Culture is either there, and I mean, at the end of the day, people do business with people, and people do business with people they know, and people do great business with people they like. And you know, some people just aren't compatible. So it's nothing to do with who's right and who's wrong.
Yeah. So your advice is, when it's not compatible, walk away.
Yeah, and that's a gut feel thing.
Yes,
absolutely,
yes.
A gut feel. Whatever, no amount of money is worth a wrong culture fit.
Okay, fantastic. So if I've been listening to you now, so if I ask you this question, why a data vault? Can we wrap that? Why a data vault?
Well, why a data vault?
Yeah.
It's basically, we explain it to entrepreneurs like this, it's basically getting your house, but you want to sell your house, ready for show day. So you put nice flowers there, you mow the lawn, lick of paint, everything looks good.
Yeah.
But then living in your house,
yeah.
for in case the doorbell rings and someone offers you an insane price that you never thought you would want to leave this beautiful house, but you know there's either a good fit.
Yes.
But also, again, it's not about selling necessarily, it's about a partnerships and any decent partner. Microsoft will not enter into a partnership with the SME without doing homework. And due diligence is another word for homework. And the only way you can do a due diligence is if you have access to good information. So why a Data Vault? Another reason is that it has been proven and that companies that's good at ESG, which is your environmental social governance. So you don't have to now do the rest of the two, but it's always good to do some stuff in that space. The value of those businesses are up to 14% more valuable.
Can you believe it?
So the other thing is, if you want to get value for your company, one way of to increase the value, every time you decrease a risk, you increase the value. If you can prove that you've decreased the risk, you've increased the value. And it gives investors less opportunity to negotiate you down. You know, because if you think about what a due diligence is, sometimes it's like, here's the letter of intent, I'm going to put $1 million in your company. But then I go in there and I find something wrong. And maybe it's just I make a mountain out of a molehill just to make sure that I say, well, when we signed this letter of intent, I thought you were, but these stuff were in place, and now I found it's not. Give them less excuses to negotiate it down.
Yeah, I love that. Brilliant, brilliant advice, especially for us SMEs. Again, the value of your company, did you hear that? Could increase up to 14% if you have your Data Vault in place. I mean, that is just valuable information. So the last component of this discussion this morning, managing your Data Vault then. Just talk to us. Now let's assume you're getting this up. How do you manage this?
Well, people don't always think about it that clearly, how dangerous it is to email your or put any of your company blueprint in not a secure environment. And sometimes it's a little bit of a catch-22, because you have an investor dangling this carrot in front of you and they say, okay, can you please email me your five-year projections or your historical financials or your IP strategy or your IP schedule? And you say yes and you email it. You know? So now it's... Someone steals that person's laptop, or even if they don't do the deal, and you say, okay, well, please, could you just destroy or delete all those emails? And it's not because of malicious intent, but I mean, would you want your deepest company's competitive advantages out in the open? No. So it's very important to make sure you put it into a secure space. Yeah. I mean, the big M&A transactions that happen all over the world and private equity, this is what they do.
Yeah.
So this is just basically a company growing up and basically getting that stuff in order.
Yeah.
There's also controlled access into a data room. So for instance, you can have different access levels. So you can give a junior employee of a company that's going to, because a due diligence team is not just one or two people, it's, you know, it depends.
I would imagine. I would imagine.
The size of the deal and stuff, we've had up to 42 people in the DD in our lives before, and usually it's sort of, you know, between three and eight type thing.
Yes.
But anyway, you can give the lawyers just access to the legal files if you want to, and then also it could be very sensitive information. You can just go to the CEO or the partner of the investor and say, listen, I'm not happy with the salary stuff or whatever. This is, so I'm only going to give you access to that thing. And then the other beauty is it usually has a heat map in terms of who's accessed it for how long, did they try and print it, and you can control that these documents can self-destruct and all those kind of things. But basically you can almost, it puts the data analytics, the power into, and that's sometimes why some investors are not so happy if you want to use a professional data room, because it puts the power in the investor. And I mean, we had a great example where we did a due diligence on a company. We were selling a company doing an exit, and there was a professional data vault provider.
Yeah.
Anyway, and these investors were the whole time, half their due diligence, they were harping on this one document. You know, you could just see, like, they're not really looking at the other stuff, they're looking at this area. So we then analyzed that document. And we then picked up, we figured out exactly why. So we then ran and got a legal opinion on how do we handle this stuff, and they then sort of said, look, we want an urgent thing to discuss with you guys on Friday, can we come and meet? And we went in that meeting
prepared,
and they said, you know, they picked up this thing, and we said, funny you should say that, because actually, you know, we did think of that, and quite honest, we got legal opinion on that, and this is the situation. They didn't quite know we got the legal opinion like yesterday. But this puts the power in your more in the entrepreneur's hand, and it's not about who's against who, as I said, culture fit partnership. But otherwise, and people also could say, we're busy with your deal, but you can see now, but hang on, you haven't even looked at my financials.
Exactly. That is absolutely fascinating. If anything, you've encouraged me to get my business in order. Definitely. Good. Any closing remarks, Kiet?
I think at the end of the day, my closing remark would be in the business of being awesome. Because that is what it's all about. You know, if you have to kind of take a look, long, hard think about the future of your business. And it's fine to be average. It's much less risky, and it's you can have it. You can grow at a steady pace. But remember, this is about accelerated growth, and it's about the 80-20 rule. So whether you are in the 20% of awesome companies, and if you are, then I mean, this whole last 25-30 minute discussion would be relevant.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, I hope you enjoyed listening to us.
Not being awesome. That's been fantastic. Thank you so much, Kiet. Just for those who are interested in reading more about this, we've got some great resources. Go to Microsoft SharePoint. We've got the link on the screen. Please go and check out Knife Capital's website, www.knifecap.com. You'll be fascinated to see how many successes there are, the importance of data management, and then the value of building a business with an exit in mind. It has been an absolute pleasure, Kiet, to have you in studio. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure to be in the business of being awesome. Definitely, this has encouraged me to do the same. Until next time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.